There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
This is an annoying story. I'm not going to lie. This is a story that I don't want to have to tell you, but unfortunately, we're in a position where a derelict 15-passenger van smashed through the wall of the West Seattle Health Club. It caught on fire. It busted a huge hole in the back of the building. The damage is to the tune of $300,000. Thankfully, no one was hurt. But it's the second crash in a month, thanks to a city with lax laws on homeless RVs and junkers. So now the staff at the West Seattle Health Club, they're done begging the city to do something about the problem. Dan Lehr is the VP of operations there, and he joins me live this morning. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
So take us through exactly what happened this time around, because this is the second instance in which something similar has happened.
That's correct. So back in July, we had an RV that lost control coming down a large hill, ran into our parking lot. Luckily, nobody was in it, and plowed through the parking lot and almost ran into a stream. And then last Wednesday night, this past Wednesday, yesterday, an RV, another one, came down the same hill. They were actually fleeing from a crime scene. They had just robbed a Safeway up the street, came down the hill, couldn't make the turn, ran into the back of the club, penetrated the wall into the pool area, almost going through the wall, knocked out a gas main, which started a pretty severe fire that engulfed the entire back of the club and
Wow. And
did a significant amount of damage.
Well, and I saw photos of the damage. It's going to cost you guys about $300,000?
Yeah, that's preliminary. As we dig into it, that number, you know, could obviously grow.
So did you recognize the van? Have you seen this van in the neighborhood before?
Absolutely. I was really disappointed with the Seattle Fire Department's analysis and statement on it. They said it was an abandoned a van or something. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the case. I've seen this RV parked in and around the club on 28th and Andover, and it comes and goes. It's been really the past year that I've been monitoring the situation. I've seen this exact van, which, by the way, does not have any valid license plates on it. It's obviously not registered. And the owners, when it crashed into our building, they fled the scene. They've never found them.
Yeah, of course not. And in this particular area of West Seattle, you've been dealing with lots of, it sounds like, RVs that are either abandoned or run down, occupied by people who are homeless, and other types of vans like this, correct?
Absolutely. It's really become critical this past year. I don't know what changed. It's been an ongoing problem for the past 4 years. But this past year, there's not only been an increase in the volume of the RVs, but the people occupying the RVs are much more dangerous. They're doing drugs. We've witnessed that. I've been physically confronted 3 times. Had to call 911, and they're breaking into cars on Andover and in the club's parking lot. So the people have become much more aggressive and dangerous to the community.
Which is the same story that we're hearing all across the Seattle area, and it's starting to get all across the Western Washington region, because the failed policies dealing with homelessness in the city of Seattle are starting to spread. And that's why this is such an important issue that extends beyond just the city of Seattle. Just joining me this morning, I'm talking with Dan Lehr. He is the VP of Operations at the West Seattle Health Club, where a van crashed into the back of his club. It almost got into the actual pool in the back of his club. The bad guys fled. This is a problem that has been plaguing this neighborhood for a very long time. Now, here's a question. Prior to what happened in the past week, what have your conversations been like with the city of Seattle?
Useless. So I've been directed to use an app called Find It, Fix It. which I have done. I have also called Seattle Police Department. I've called a complaint line at the mayor's office. And really the only area that I get any traction is when I get in touch with the mayor's office and complain that there's a biohazard, there's a lot of waste that these RVs are dumping along the street, garbage, needles. They dump their holding tanks right in the street, so there's human feces everywhere. And that's the only time that anybody will come out and clear out any of the RVs. So WashDOT will come through, clear out the RV that's the big offender, and then clean up the area and leave. And, you know, within a week, there's another RV right in its place.
Let me ask you something. Do you pay your taxes?
Absolutely. We pay a lot of sales tax to the city. We have 100 employees, so there's a lot of employee tax. I mean, you know, we're just overburdened with that.
You're just generally a business that cares about the West Seattle community, correct?
Yeah, we've been here since the year 2000 in various different forms. We've been running the club now in conjunction with Pietro Monaco Properties for the past 4 years, and have really turned the business around from about a base of 700 or 800 members to 4,500 members now. And so we're actually impacting the community along with our 100 employees in a very positive way.
So you actually care about the area, you pay your taxes, you give a damn about your employees, and you care about the safety of the clients that you serve. And that's exactly why the city doesn't care about you. That is why the city doesn't care, because you know what the truth is? You're going to still pay your taxes after all of this. You're still going to treat the community in a way that deserves respect. You're still going to treat everybody with the utmost care, and they know at the city of Seattle that they can take advantage of you. And so you have a representative in Lisa Herbold, who won by like 7 votes when she initially ran for the Seattle City Council, and you finally had to get a little bit more aggressive to get a response from her, right?
I did. In fairness to her, it was the first time I had reached out directly to her. I had been dealing with the mayor's office, and like I said, I was getting absolutely nowhere. And so I did reach out to her, and she did actually give me a call back, told me a little bit about the program that's in place, the RV remediation program, which on paper sounds like a pretty good idea, but in practice, it's obviously not working. And here's why I know that. Just 3 days ago, they came out and assessed the area in and around the club as not needing a cleanup.
Of course.
Well, a day and a half later, I've got an RV in the back of my club doing $300,000 worth of damage. So obviously, the criteria that this program is using to assess the situation doesn't work. To me, it's just another example of another taxpayer-funded program that's just not effective.
So what are you going to do? I mean, at this point, obviously, you're talking about it, you're raising awareness, and we're here to help you, but, you know, as a business owner, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think we want to avoid taking legal action, but if we don't start getting some sort of action from the city and an acknowledgement of the problem, then we're going to have to take it another step. I am going to try to work the avenues that have been given to me, and Lisa Herbold will certainly be hearing from me as early as today or tomorrow to try and get a plan of action here. You know, in the meantime, we're trying to get the club back open for our member, or the pool area. The club is open, but the pool area back open, and we're going to try to do some improvements and try to actually turn it into a positive for the members.
I wish you all the luck in the world. We will be doing whatever it is we can to raise awareness for this issue, because your story is not all that unique, and that's the sad part. There are lots of businesses out there that are dealing with this problem, lots of businesses who are begging the city of Seattle to do something. Cops want to do something, but they're not being allowed to, and this is now the city that we live in. And unless we actually step up and actually vote in this next upcoming election and keep the momentum going for the next year, nothing's going to change. And so I'm sorry that you guys had to deal with this. I'm absolutely sorry that you had to deal with this. And when you do not hear from the mayor's office or from Lisa Herbold and they're not doing you any help, let us know immediately. And we're going to put out the word out there. We're going to make this a lot more tough for them to get around and just simply ignore. Dan Lehrer is the VP of Operations over at the West Seattle Health Club. Dan, thank you so much for joining me live this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll have photos up as well as a story of all of this over at KTCH.com later on this morning. You're listening to The Jason Ranch Show. Welcome back to The Jason Ranch Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in, texting us on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline at 1-800-465-8770. Producer Darren, you know what voicemail I just listened to?
I do not.
Remember that guy who complained about my nasally voice?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's back, and he's got a two-minute-long voicemail that we'll definitely play during the after-show podcast.
Oh, I'm excited.
Well, you are going to love this. He calls me self-centered, which is true, but then also says I need to speak from the chest because I'm a little wimpy.
Yeah, you do, and you are.
Okay, well, at least I own it. I'm proud of who I am.
I'm not any better.
Oh, no, he said I should stop talking over you.
Oh.
Which, yeah, well, when we get the Darren Casey show, then I'll stop talking over him. How about that, sir? But we'll play the full clip, because he left it on our show voicemail, which very clearly says, if you leave me a voicemail, I'm going to air it on the radio. So we'll air it on the podcast. If you want to listen to the podcast, because we continue talking after 9 o'clock, can't shut us up. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link. Let's talk about the debate last night between Dino Rossi and Dr. Kim Schreier. Did you know that she was a doctor? Did you know that? I bet you didn't know that.
A pediatrician.
Yeah. I learned that 17 times last night. It's actually rather ridiculous. The last time they did the debate between Susan Hutchinson and Maria Cantwell, they let people vote on a topic, a series of three topics. And during that time, they voted for guns. And last night, folks voted for guns. And they talked in general about whether or not they support this effort to stop people between the ages of 18 and 21 from purchasing quote-unquote assault rifles, again, or semi-automatic weapons. They changed the terms all the time. Here's what Dr. Kim Schreier had to say.
Guns are the number three cause of death in children. And I am a mom, and I'm a pediatrician. And that is what makes me so motivated to take on this really difficult issue and really important issue of keeping our kids safe. Look, I send my child to public school every day, and no parent should ever have to worry about their child's safety at school. And as a pediatrician, I understand that
She's a doctor. Did you know that? She's a pediatrician. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard during the debate.
I'm just double-checking, because it's very important. That's why she has to tell us so many times.
The four gun deaths in this district are from suicide, and I take care of depressed teenagers. And so what I want are to have guns owned safely, and that means making sure that they are locked up and not in the hands of children.
Is there anyone out there who's, like, on the side of more guns in the hands of children? Because she's implying that everyone who doesn't believe what she believes, you just want kids to have access to guns. Is there, like, a pro kids with guns lobby out there that I don't know about it, because it's certainly not the Republicans.
It also means having universal background checks and reporting systems and making sure that guns never fall into the hands of people with a history of domestic violence or severe mental illness. Now, my opponent has an A rating from the NRA.
That's why I'm voting
and in his past election had $450,000 of advertising put on TV on his behalf. I can tell you that I will sit down with anyone to keep our children safe. He will not make those moves because he's supported by the gun lobby.
So, just to clarify, when she says she would sit down with anyone, she says in that clip, but not the NRA, not gun rights organizations that are concerned with your overzealousness. You won't be sitting down with them, but anyone other than people who disagree with you is what she really meant. Here's Dino Rossi reacting.
Well, I'm the father of four, and just a few weeks ago, my wife and I became grandparents for the first time. And there's nothing more precious to me than my children and my grandchildren, just like everybody else that's watching right now. You know, and when you talk about safety and things, safety in schools and issues like that, there's nothing more precious to us, but there was more security getting in this building than there actually is going into a school. We have 296 school districts in this state. I'm not saying we should arm teachers, but I think we should have school resource officers to make sure we protect our children. You know, I've said all along that I'm willing to work with anybody that actually has a solution that's effective and constitutional. Because when I'm sworn in as a member of Congress, I'm sworn in to actually uphold the Constitution. It's not just the First Amendment, but it's also the Second Amendment as well. And I plan on doing that. You know, I don't believe, and that many people don't believe, that provision and a few other provisions in there are actually constitutional. But the courts will decide that.
I would love to know from Kim Schreier. She won't come on the show.
Doctor.
She's a doctor?
Yes. Don't forget to say that.
What kind of doctor?
A pediatrician.
Oh. How'd you learn that?
The debate.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you positive?
She's a doctor.
Okay, well, if you say so, I need to hear from her specifically before I accept that as fact. I'd love to learn from Dr. Kim Schreier if she's going to be the one going to soldiers, to troops who are 20 years old, if she's going to go there and ask them for their guns. I'm kind of curious to find out if she's going to be the one to do that, because she's probably not. So who's she expecting to do that? And I'd love to know what she says directly to them as she tries to take away their guns. I would love to know that. Love to know that. By the way, I would love it if you would text the keyword scooter to 1-800-465-8770. Because we're still raising money for a nonprofit out of Redmond. The Pacific Scooter Experience. They had their scooters stolen. Scooters that they give to kids for their indoor park. And you guys have been killing it. We are almost to the goal of $1,500. We're like $400 away. Big shout out to Ben, who donated $100, Amber, $50, MJ, $10, Douglas, and an anonymous user, $5, Lori, $50. Good for you guys. I donated $50. If you can donate to this Redmond-based nonprofit, they just need an extra $400 to get to their goal. Text the keyword scooter to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. A new tiny home village is set to open in the heart of South Lake Union in Seattle. One that has some neighbors concerned about safety. In fact, I'm one of them. The encampment will be managed by the Low Income Housing Institute, Lehigh. And to help us figure out exactly what the plan entails to ensure that the neighborhood crime doesn't spike is Josh Castle. He is Lehigh's Director of Community Engagement. Josh, good morning.
Good morning.
So in an interview, I believe it was Cairo 7, it might have been Como News, you said safety is going to be the number one priority at this tiny home encampment. How so? What's the plan?
Sure. So the tiny house village in South Lake Union will have a 24/7 security, and each of the residents that will be moving there are going to sign a code of conduct. They're going to have to agree to that and abide by it. And the code of conduct includes things such as no disrupting of neighbors or just village harmony in general. And, you know, obviously, you know, no violence or theft or any of those things. And then they are also required to do a certain amount of chores and community activities. So we want all the residents that are there to, you know, to, of course, to understand that and then be part of making sure the village is successful and that it's running smoothly. And so between the security that we're having, the on-site staff, and then I should also mention we have several case managers that will be helping as well.
Yeah. That's okay.
With the residents to help them with housing, employment, education, healthcare,
so
all rental services.
Let's talk just briefly about...
In all those things, we expect that, you know, we're going to have a peaceful village.
Yeah, and look, I hope that the village is going to be peaceful. Security, for example, are they armed security? When we say security, are we talking about off-duty police officers? What does that entail?
Sure, it's going to be Lehigh staff that are there around the clock, and they will be running, you know, the security booth that we have that will be right there at the front.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be people have to sign in. Anybody who comes in and out will have to sign in, and they'll have to make sure that they are you know, legit, of course, before they enter the village. And there's only one way to enter and exit.
Are they trained security staff, or they're just staffers?
They'll be doing perimeter checks, you know.
Josh, are they trained security members, or are they just staff members who are put in that position?
They're staff members that are specifically, they're actually called village organizers.
Okay.
And they're also doing security and management of the village.
So it's not security staff.
Well, it's both security and management of the village, but they're there. We basically have a house that is devoted to security. That's right there at the front for people to sign in, and they monitor everything going on at the front, and you know they monitor everything going around the village.
Do they have means of personal protection?
I guess, do you want to ask a specific question on that?
Do they have anything on them, whether it's like pepper spray or a gun or a baton or something? Just, you know, if the intent is to...
Well, they're not going to be like police, you know?
Yeah.
They won't have something like that. But I will say that our experience with, you know, the other villages, like we opened True Hope Village in early September, and then Whittier Heights Village several months before that. And the security staff there and the case management staff, you know, have, you know, reported to us, and I go and visit the villages personally several times. The villages are peaceful, and everything is going well. And there are not, you know, the issues that, that some people mentioned have happened at, you know, previous villages. That's just not the case for these ones. I don't visualize there being a need for something like, you know, arming people or anything.
If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Josh Castle. He is Lehigh's Director of Community Engagement. Lehigh is the low-income housing institute. They're the ones who are managing this new tiny home encampment in the South Lake Union neighborhood. And we're talking about security and safety because one of the encampments that you did not mention is Licton Springs, a neighborhood that saw an increase of 104% in crime, according to Q13. Was safety the number one priority for Licton Springs?
So Licton Springs Village, that's a low barrier village, and that village has served several hundred people, we had a couple of neighbors raise concerns about increases in 911 calls,
104% increase,
and things like that. And then what we did is we went in and we implemented changes such as adding cameras and lighting, mm-hmm. And really focusing on the perimeter of the village. So the residents of the village are not an issue at all. It's what's happening outside of the village that is an issue.
So like it's attracting.
So we tried to basically address those by putting those measures in place. And they have actually been very helpful. And keep in mind as well that the 911 calls that are reported, many of those calls are being made by the village staff themselves. The residents and the neighbors are aligned on this, that they don't want to be dealing with, you know, crime and, disruption happening outside the village. Like they don't want that as well. So whenever they see suspicious behavior occurring, they'll be the ones making those the phone calls to staff on site.
But isn't it a valid concern that these encampments do have the tendency to bring crime to the areas?
I know that there's a perception around that with I think specifically with Licton Springs, and I don't think that is borne out, but there's no direct connection. I think people are correlating that.
Are you closing Licton Springs?
Like I said, we put in these improvements in place, and it made a pretty big difference with.
But Josh, aren't you guys closing Licton Springs?
People that are loitering outside of the village. There's a lot less of that happening. It has made a difference, and then I think there were issues happening along Nesbitt. Right outside the village, and we basically, you know, worked with the city, the police department, to activate that street and get more SPD, you know, bike patrols going up and down it. And that's made a difference as well. So we're learning, you know, whenever we set up a village, we're learning about these things. And, you know, it's the challenge of Aurora itself. I'm actually a neighbor of that area. I live like literally about a block from Woodson Springs. And it's, you know, it's, those problems have been there, crime, you know, drug use, prostitution, those kind of things. Those have existed
sure.
the entire, you know, 15 years that I've been
no,
there.
There's no doubt.
Many years before that.
There's no doubt, Josh,
so,
that it's an area.
It was pre-existing.
Josh, there's no doubt that there was clearly some pre-existing crime. But when you look at the data, there was an increase in crime to the tune of 104%, which is obviously significant. And the concern from some folks is that this type of encampment will draw people who should not be there to the neighborhood. You make the point that it's a little bit different than certainly what we've been seeing in South Lake Union, in the sense of that's a low barrier encampment, and maybe that has something to do with it. But it feels like the South Lake Union encampment, which a lot of people were caught off guard because the city was keeping it private for a very long time, and they had made a decision to move forward with this encampment before any of the community hearings even took place, and it was announced at the second hearing that they were going to move forward with it, is that this is kind of low barrier, but you're not calling it. If someone brings heroin on site, is that a violation of the rules?
So there's no drug use allowed in community spaces in the village.
Is that what I asked?
When it comes to the tiny houses themselves, you know, we're not going to go around and inspect each house. It is going to be a behavioral-based model, so people do have to abide by the rules that are in the code of conduct. And, you know, Jason, I also want to mention, since we are running short on time, that these villages have touched the lives of 1,000 people. They've made a huge improvement in their lives, and we've been able to house 350 people, you know, have transitioned into permanent housing from the villages. So they do make a difference. This is not a permanent solution. It's an interim solution, and it allows people to get off the streets, out of the danger, isolation, and cold of homelessness, into a tiny house, working with our case managers to access treatment, access housing, employment, healthcare, and then transition into housing. So housing is the ultimate goal. Of course, we're dealing with, you know, the scale of the crisis, the lack of affordable housing, which is the biggest crisis I think many people believe we're experiencing in the city. So that is a significant challenge. But even with
sure.
that, we've been able to transition that many people into housing.
Yeah, the problem is, Josh, that a huge portion of why we're dealing with this situation is drug addiction, right? I mean, that is something we don't talk about enough of. We seem to pretend that everyone who's living out on the street was just one missed paycheck away from landing in that position. But a lot of this is being driven by drug use. And the concern is that because you're not actually controlling for heroin or any sort of opioid, you're putting people in a position where they're not going to get better. And not only are they going to stay in that position where they're not getting treatment, you're now putting them next door to someone who maybe is going through treatment and is trying to stay away from heroin or another drug. And lo and behold, their neighbor, who you're not checking whatsoever, might have access to a drug that then gets that person re-addicted.
Yeah, but don't you think it's going to be a lot easier to help people with getting in treatment and helping people with recovering from those, you know, from addictions or any issues that they're having, if they're actually in a tiny house community that can, you know, turn on the heat, that can have security, that can be safe?
No, honestly, I think what helps the most, and this is for me, is treatment on demand. Treatment on demand, I think that helps the most. And I know that we have the ability to provide that, and I would rather see our money going into that. Now, with that said, it's not that I want tiny homes to fail. I don't. I was a believer in tiny homes. I think the one in South Lake Union, the position you guys put it in, the physical location, is absurd. I think it's not going to benefit the community, nor is it going to benefit the people there. I've been talking with Josh Castle. He is Lehigh's Director of Community Engagement. Lehigh Low Income Housing Institute will be managing this spot in South Lake Union. I happen to live very, very close by, so I'll be paying close attention to what happens in the neighborhood. And if it's all good news, you will certainly all hear that, because I like solutions that work. If it's bad news, I will be reporting that as well, and we'll have Josh on again to be held to account for some of the stuff that's going on, because again, we all have this shared interest in making sure that this stuff works. Josh, I appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely.
Have a good
day. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Do you think this is a good idea? Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. My apologies for the show today because it's been pretty Seattle-centric. We try not to do that, but every once in a while, it's just one of those days where the news that comes out of Seattle is so important that we have to talk about it. And we hear oftentimes from folks, hey, I live in Mukilteo, I live in Puyallup, I'm in Renton or Sammamish, it doesn't impact me. But it does, because bad policies, dangerous policies of Seattle end up spreading. And I got a phone call not long ago, this morning, that was pretty panicked. And we're going to explore it more tomorrow. But there is some serious concern that the Seattle City Council is not going to vote in favor of this new SPD contract. A contract that they finally got, officers finally got after working without one for the last 4 years nearly. Because of the way that this process works, they need a supermajority of support in the council. That means they need seven. They need seven of the nine to say yes. As of right now, the rumor suggests that they have three no votes. Now, one of them, of course, is going to be Shama Sawant. We understand that. She is virulently anti-cop. You're not going to change her mind. The other one we're hearing, again, makes sense because he's anti-cop, is Mike O'Brien. But the third one that we're hearing is a no vote, but it's not confirmed yet, is Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold, who barely, just barely won her election on that council. Understand that if they do not pass this contract, if you thought the mass exodus that we talked about before was a big deal, understand it's going to pale into in comparison to what we're going to experience as a result of saying no to this contract that was overwhelmingly supported by the force. Cops are telling me they will literally leave. They will not work in Seattle anymore if this happens. There are people within the department who are gravely concerned. Now, this is a show that cares about cops, whether we're talking about SPD officers or Bellevue police officers or Everett or Tacoma. We care about cops. And so no matter where you are, I need your help in making sure that Lisa Herbold doesn't become that third no vote that's going to kill this contract. I need you to politely call her office, email her office today. Because this is something that's urgent. This is something that cannot wait. Text the keyword COPS to 1-800-465-8770. If you care about our officers, if you care about our safety, if you're concerned with the direction that this city and region is going, text the keyword COPS to 1-800-465-8770. I'm going to send you Lisa Herbold's phone number for her office and her email address. It is imperative that you politely, civilly ask her to support the SPD contract and explain why it's so important to back our cops. This is as serious of an issue that Seattle has faced since the homelessness crisis. Text the keyword COPS, C-O-P-S, COPS, to 1-800-465-8770. This is the time to get involved. This is the time to spend just a couple minutes civilly, respectfully, politely calling Lisa Herbold's office and the Seattle City Council or emailing her and telling her how important it is that she supports this contract. Let us flood her office with phone calls and emails because you guys care about cops just as much as I do. We understand that these are heroes. We're going to back them. Text the keyword COPS to 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show.